Hi, this is Elizabeth Lynch of China Law and Policy, and welcome to our podcast. Last month's strategic and economic dialogue featured many thorny issues that have been plaguing U.S.-China relations for the past few months. North Korea, currency manipulation, Iran, and government procurement? Yes, government procurement. Not one what one would think as a controversial topic worthy of a major dialogue between two of the world's leading powers. So to help us understand the addition of government procurement to the SNED agenda is Brett Gerson, an associate in the International Trade and Public Procurement Practices at Reed Smith and co-author of the recent article, Can China's Government Procurement Market Be Cracked? In this month's The China Business Review. Thank you for joining us, Brett. Just to begin, what exactly is meant by government procurement, and how does this involve U.S.-China relations?
Okay, well, essentially, government procurement is the process whereby governments or government ministries or agencies can purchase goods or services at a large scale to provide for use in the carrying out of in government processes. So, for example, this could be, as an example of goods, a government agency could purchase in bulk a large number of, let's say, printers or staplers or another good. It could also be services. The government could enter into agreement with an IT company to provide some type of computer services or internet maintenance or something like that. It's becoming a very big issue between the U.S. and China because, like many other areas of China's market, there's just immense potential for companies, both Chinese and foreign, to get into China's procurement market. Obviously, the Chinese government is huge. They have a wide array of ministries and agencies, both at a sort of federal level coming from Beijing and at a provincial level.
Mm-hmm. And how big is this market, this potential market, in U.S. dollars, approximately?
It's hard to say exactly. Most estimates hover around $90 billion.
Wow.
Which is really huge. But it's tough because it's hard to say exactly which entities are state-owned enterprises, so which are entirely mm-hmm. private and which are sort of public in nature. But most estimates hover around $90 billion, and I've seen a couple where in 2010 that's expected to reach $100 billion.
Okay. And currently, does China have any policy or laws in regards to government procurement of foreign companies' goods or services?
Yeah. In 2002, China promulgated the government procurement law. And it's somewhat controversial in nature, but it basically just states that Chinese government agencies and entities must purchase domestic goods, works, or services, except where those goods, works, or services can't be obtained within China under reasonable commercial terms. Mm-hmm. And those reasonable commercial terms are defined as 20% more than imports. Now, the problem with the government procurement law is that it never defined what is domestic. So companies, particularly foreign companies, had a hard time cracking that market because it was so easy for the Chinese government and Chinese government agencies and entities to just simply purchase products or goods or services from Chinese companies. So since 2002, there's been a lot of international pressure on China to better define what is domestic. Mm-hmm. And so they finally did this in January 2010. Just about 6 months ago, the Chinese government issued what's called the Implementing Regulations. And these aren't exactly law, but they define how the Chinese government is supposed to carry out the government procurement law. And the Implementing Regulations set forth that it better defined domestic, and it said that essentially domestic manufacturing costs that exceed a certain threshold, those products will be fined as domestic. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Implementing Regulations, they didn't actually set the threshold, and we were able to look at some other guidance that the Chinese government had issued recently, and we were able to guess that they probably meant 50%. Now, just a few weeks ago, right before the high-level meetings in China that you discussed, the Chinese government again issued another sort of policy guidance paper that did clarify that the threshold for a product to be considered domestic is 50% of domestic production costs.
So if they have clarified this recently and this law has been in place since 2002, why is this now becoming such an issue? What has caused government procurement to become almost the centerpiece of the strategic and economic dialogue last month?
There's two main reasons, I think, and they sort of come together. The first is in the World Trade Organization, there's an agreement called the Government Procurement Agreement. And it's a plurilateral agreement, meaning that some but not all of the World Trade Organization members are part of this agreement. And it basically just states that if you're a party to this agreement, you cannot favor products or services from your country against those from a foreign country. China, when they first came on to the World Trade Organization in 2001, they promised that they would join the government procurement agreement as soon as possible. Now, they have submitted a proposal before, back in 2007, but it didn't quite come to the level of international best practices, and the member companies essentially rejected it. Mm-hmm. Since that point, the United States, as well as major European countries and other members to the GPA have pressured China to resubmit a proposal that do sort of come up to the standard that the member countries expect. And finally, China agreed just recently at the high-level discussions in China that they were going to submit a new proposal in July of this year, right before the time that the World Trade Organization Government Procurement Committee meets. So I think that's one of the issues that's really bringing it to the forefront, is that there's a lot of pressure on China to join the GPA agreement. The other issue, and this was also discussed and mentioned by Hillary Clinton and Timothy Geithner, is China has set forth a very controversial policy called indigenous innovation policies. And basically, these are policies that direct provincial governments and agencies and ministries to buy only from certain product catalogs. And these catalogs are primarily made up of high-tech and IT goods. And traditionally, it's been extremely hard for foreign companies to get their products onto these catalogs. For example, and I mentioned this in the article, they're out of the Shanghai catalog, the Shanghai-based catalog, there's over 500 products that are listed on this catalog, and foreign entities make up only two of these products. And of those two, they're not entirely foreign entities. They're joint ventures between a foreign company and a local Chinese company. So I think those two issues, one, that China's been slow to join the World Trade Organization Government Procurement Agreement, and two, these indigenous innovation policies that make it very difficult for foreign companies to get their high-tech products listed on these procurement catalogs.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of China favoring its domestic products over foreign products, is China really acting any differently from other countries in terms of government procurement? I mean, isn't the U.S. government required to purchase U.S. products? And how is China any different from that?
Well, there's a couple differences. The U.S. and other countries that are members of the GPA do have policies that direct or allow their own domestic government entities to purchase only domestic products. There's a couple differences. One, here in the U.S. we have what's called the Buy American Act. Mm-hmm. And the Buy American Act essentially says that federal agencies can only procure unmanufactured articles that have been mined or produced in the U.S., or manufactured articles that were made substantially of articles and materials mined or produced in the U.S. But there's several exceptions. One is you can waive that if it would be consistent with public interest, or if observing that preference would be inconsistent with the public interest. Second, where the cost of buying the U.S. goods is sort of unreasonably higher than would you purchase them from a foreign entity. And the third exception is where the products in question are in too short of a supply in the U.S. to make that purchase feasible. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, government agencies may purchase foreign-made information technology equipment. And so that's sort of a big issue, and that sort of touches on the China indigenous innovation policies. There's sort of a cutout mm-hmm. for U.S. government agencies to waive the Buy American requirements for sort of high-tech, IT goods. Also, the Buy American Act doesn't include services, which the Chinese government procurement policies will. Mm-hmm. And you know, as you know, services is a huge sector for foreign companies in China. Legal services, accounting services, IT services, things of this nature. In addition to the Buy American Act, we also have the Trade Agreements Act. And this is a pretty big issue because the Buy American Act will be waived where we have a Trade Agreements Act agreement with another country. And these include all the countries that are signatories of the WTO government procurement agreement that we mentioned before, that China is not a signatory to. These include all countries that we have free trade agreements with, all least developed countries, and also the Caribbean Basin countries. Mm-hmm. So you're right in that the U.S. does have certain policies, like the Buy American Act, that on their face appear somewhat discriminatory. But I think that the differences between China's policies and U.S. policies is that we have so many carve-outs mm-hmm. for our Buy American Act, exceptions, and instances where the Buy American Act requirements will be waived, where we have agreements in place with other countries. Mm-hmm. China's not one of them.
Right, right. And just to go back to the indigenous innovation policy of China, because that was something that Secretary of State Clinton did mention specifically as a problem. I mean, I guess just examining the equities of it, given that the U.S. and other countries were largely able to develop their technology sector before our current global trade system and before there was competition from other countries, shouldn't China also be permitted this luxury? I mean, don't they have an opportunity to catch up? And isn't China's indigenous innovation policy just a way to allow its small but growing technology sector to really flourish?
Yeah, there's no question that China should be allowed to sort of foster the growth of their high-tech services. But I think, and Secretary Clinton and Secretary Geithner both mentioned this, that there's ways to do this that are less discriminatory with foreign firms. Rather than link the indigenous innovation policies to government procurement, which they're trying to do, we think that there's other ways, such as using tax incentives or research and development support programs that can sort of achieve the same goals without the discriminatory effect. We think that, you know, generally China can grow this area by including foreign firms rather than excluding them. And like I said, there's certainly sort of high-tech tax status programs that they can enter into, and R&D programs. One of the big ways that their policies discriminate against foreign firms is initially when they released the indigenous innovation policies, they required that to get on these catalogs that I mentioned before, mm-hmm. The company has to. The trademark of the product has to be owned by a Chinese company, and they also had to have full ownership of the product's IP in China. This was really stringent. This was tough. So, thankfully, just a couple months ago, in April, actually, the Chinese government again released sort of a guiding implementing regulations memo. Now, this doesn't have the force of law, but they're proposing to relax these requirements by saying that instead of having full ownership of the trademark in China, the company need only have exclusive rights to the product's trademark in China. And instead of having complete ownership of the intellectual property in China, you only have to have a license to use the intellectual property in China. So this is definitely a step in the right direction. But ultimately, I think ideally foreign companies, U.S. companies, would want to de-link the indigenous innovation policies from government procurement.
Right. Okay. And just getting back to the strategic and economic dialogue, do you know what it was that the U.S. side was seeking to achieve in terms of government procurement and indigenous the indigenous innovation policy? I know you had mentioned a little bit before, but can you just summarize what the U.S. wanted out of it?
Sure. I think the first thing they wanted is to urge China to submit an additional proposal, a new proposal, to the World Trade Organization Government Procurement Agreement, which they have agreed to do by mid-July. So that's definitely a step in the right direction. We don't know exactly what that's going to say, but we're thinking that it's going to be a step closer towards the sort of international best practices and the other proposals that the member countries have agreed to. And second, I think that the U.S. delegates really wanted the Chinese government to relax the indigenous innovation policies and de-link them from the government procurement policies. As it stands right now, in the proposed government procurement, in the implementing regulations, Article 9 says that Chinese government entities and agencies should favor indigenous innovation products, which are only listed on these catalogs, like I mentioned. So I think what the U.S. government would like to see is getting rid of the indigenous innovation article from the government procurement law. And it's unclear that the Chinese government is going to do that.
Right. And even though it seems like there was some progress at the strategic and economic dialogue, and China has agreed to submit a new proposal, I mean, do you really see, though, China, I guess, even if it submits a new proposal, do you see that proposal to the WTO to join the government procurement portion of the WTO, do you see that as actually being something that other member countries would agree to? I mean, do you see China acquiescing to a lot of the foreign pressure? And, I mean, is it really in China's self-interest to do that at this stage in its development?
It's hard to say at this point. I think we've seen that in other areas, in strategic and economic areas, mm-hmm. China has certainly refused to acquiesce to international pressure to do certain things or not do certain things. So it's hard to say without seeing their proposal. Mm-hmm. I think that the GPA member countries would reject a proposal that's not up to standard. They've done it before, and I think they might do it again. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that it would be in China's interest. I mean, I think China at this point has to understand what the member countries expect, you know, what the parameters would be. And, you know, it's unclear to me whether they would submit something that would be any less than that. So it's hard to say. I don't know. Generally, it seems that China doesn't acquiesce. However, if the international community is successful in persuading them that it's in their best interest to relax their indigenous innovation policies and to de-link them from government procurement, then I think they'll go ahead and submit a proposal that's up to par, that's in line with international best practices. Over the last several months, since January, since they issued the implementing regulations, there's been significant international backlash, and they have sort of watered down some of the more strict discriminatory provisions in the implementing regulations. So there's been progress, and I suppose they only have another 6-7 weeks before they're going to submit their proposal to the Government Procurement Committee. Mm-hmm. So it's unclear how much further they're going to go in watering those items down.
Okay, well, I guess only time will tell what happens in July. Thank
we'll
you
see.
Very
it'll,
much,
it'll
Brett.
Be interesting, and yeah. Hopefully we can follow up and discuss what happens.
That would be great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.